Let me tell you how her labs came back. White blood cells, normal. Lactate, normal. But this looked like a slam dump septic patient. We were wrong.
Hey there. I'm your host, Sarah Lorenzini, a rapid response nurse and educator who loves telling stories to teach critical thinking. This podcast is for nurses who want the knowledge, skills, and confidence to respond to any emergency. With almost 20 years of experience in the ER and critical care nursing, and a master's degree in nursing education, I have a lot of stories to share, and I love to nerd out and break down the pathophysiology, pharmacology, and nurses' role in emergencies. Stories bring learning to life. It is way easier to learn from and remember the stories that my colleagues and mentors have told me than anything I've read in a textbook. And that is why I made this podcast. Every episode is packed full of exactly what you need to know to handle whatever crisis that could arise on your shift. It's one thing to get the right answer on the test, but knowing how to detect when your patient is declining and what to do when your patient is crashing is what will make or break your day and might just save your patient's life. Welcome back to the Rapid Response RN podcast. Last week, we talked about shock index and how dividing the heart rate by the systolic blood pressure can give you a valuable tool to help detect patients who are compensating for something and need further investigation or interventions. So this week, I want to share with you another valuable tool for your tool belt, the pulse pressure. But like always, let's apply the concept to a real patient so it makes sense. I actually have two case studies for you today because I want to show you how a patient with a narrow and wide pulse pressure might present. So without further ado, let me tell you about Mrs. D. So Mrs. D was the sweetest 7-year-old woman who came to the ER with nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea times 3 days. Her heart rate was 125, her blood pressure was 80 over 65, respiratory rate of 22, oxygen saturation 96% on room air, and her temperature was 37 Celsius. So despite her hypotension, she was still mentating well, but just weak and tired from days of vomiting and diarrhea. I mean, she was pretty depleted. That's why I'm calling her D, Mrs. D for depleted. But despite probably feeling like crap, she still found a way to be so pleasant and thankful for our care. Like, she's one of those patients that thanks you for starting her IV. You know, the patients that make you love nursing and make all the hard days worth it. Anyways, Mrs. D had a pretty typical sepsis presentation or vital signs, but the blood pressure of 80 over 65, that's only a pulse pressure of 15, and that's odd. I remember thinking to myself, goodness, that's a weird blood pressure, but honestly didn't think much more of it until later. So she met sepsis criteria. She's tachycardic, she's hypotensive, she's got an increased respiratory rate. So of course she's going to get the 30 cc's per kilogram fluid bolus, blood cultures, lactate, broad spectrum antibiotics, all the things. So at my facility, we also have the option of using non-invasive advanced hemodynamic monitoring to help guide therapy. So after we got the fluids going and the blood drawn, the first dose of antibiotic in, we place it on the patient. Now, before I dive into what I found with the advanced hemodynamic monitor, let me tell you how her labs came back. White blood cells, normal. Lactate, normal. But this looked like a slam dump septic patient. We were wrong. So I won't go into a whole teaching on advanced hemodynamic monitoring for this episode, but just real quick. After 2 liters of fluid, her stroke volume was still 45 and her SVR was 2000. Stroke volume is how much blood comes out of the left ventricle with each contraction. And a normal stroke volume is 60 to 100 mLs. So about 60 to 100 mLs is squeezed out every time. But hers was 45 mLs, even after a fluid bolus. And the weirder one was the SVR of 2000. Now, normal SVR, or systemic vascular resistance, is 800 to 1200. So septic patients are generally vasodilated with a low SVR, and hers was quite high, which didn't seem very septic-y to me. It looks like she was just really volume depleted. So when the body senses hypovolemia, it compensates by vasoconstricting to help maintain a blood pressure. But this dear patient wasn't septic. She was just severely dehydrated.
and then it clicked. Her narrow pulse pressure. Narrow pulse pressure is associated with low stroke volume states, one of which is hypovolemia. We ended up giving Mrs. D yet another liter of fluids and admitting her to the hospital to give some more IV fluids and antiemetics. But she wasn't hypotensive from septic shock. She was just really hypovolemic. And I could have known that if I had thought through the weird blood pressure a little bit more. So let's take a minute to talk about pulse pressure, but then stay tuned to the end because I want to share another case study with you about a patient with a wide pulse pressure. All right. So pulse pressure is the systolic blood pressure minus the diastolic blood pressure. It's just the difference between the two. So all you need to measure pulse pressure is a sphygmomanometer, that's the big word for the blood pressure cuff with a little pressure gauge on it, and a stethoscope, and maybe a calculator, depending on how good you are at mental math. Now, to be clear, this is not the pressure inside the heart in systole versus diastole. We can measure that too, but it requires more advanced tools than just a sphygmomanometer and a stethoscope. So the systolic blood pressure is the pressure exerted on the arterial walls when the heart squeezes, and the diastolic blood pressure is the pressure inside the vessel walls when the heart is at rest or when it's filling. One thing to keep in mind is that blood pressure is affected by so many factors, like how much volume is on board, how constricted or dilated or stiff the blood vessels are, and how effectively the heart is pumping that blood through. So if a normal blood pressure is 120 over 80, that would mean a normal pulse pressure would be around 40. 120 minus 80 equals 40. So a large, or what we call a wide pulse pressure, is greater than the normal range, and a smaller or more narrow pulse pressure would be less than normal pulse pressure of around 40. Now, there's some debate as to what a wide pulse pressure is. So some say greater than 40, others say greater than 100. I'm not here to say which guideline is correct, but for the sake of this episode, I'm just going to say wide versus narrow. But the guidelines for a narrow pulse pressure are pretty well agreed on. So a narrow pulse pressure would be less than 25% of the systolic blood pressure. So in my head, I just take the systolic blood pressure that I have, divide it by 4, whatever number that is. If the pulse pressure is smaller than that number, then we have a narrow pulse pressure. All right, try to do some examples here. It's hard with an audio format, so just imagine mental math with me. Okay, so if we have a systolic of 120, which is normal, if you divide that by 4, 25%, that gives you 30. So 120 minus 30 equals 90. So a blood pressure of 120 over 90 would give you a pulse pressure of only 30, which is narrow. It's less than 25% of the systolic. All right, another math example. If you have a blood pressure of 100 systolic and you divide 100 by 4, that gives you 25. 100 minus 25 would be 75. So if you have a blood pressure of 100 over 75, you have a narrow pulse pressure. So in the case of Mrs. D, her systolic blood pressure upon arrival was 80. So 80 divided by 4 is 20. If the pulse pressure is less than 20, that's going to be narrow for her. So 80 over 60 would have been considered a narrow pulse pressure. And her blood pressure was 80 over 65, giving her a pulse pressure of only 15. Yep, that's pretty narrow. So she was very volume depleted, which dropped her stroke volume, because for her, that just wasn't enough volume on board. She had lost so much in the form of vomiting and diarrhea. Now, there are several things that could cause a narrow pulse pressure, not just hypovolemia. Hey guys, I just wanted to take a quick break to talk about something that I think is really important, and that is getting certified in your nursing specialty. Not because having the extra letters behind your name make you a better nurse, but because taking the time to deep dive into all that you need to know for your specialty, putting in the study hours, and dedicating yourself to mastering what your patients need you to know how to manage them best, that, the prep for the exam, is what will make you a better nurse. So whatever specialty you are currently working in, go study for that certification exam. And if you're a critical care nurse, I have something that will help you pass your CCRN. My friend Nick McGowan has an excellent online self-paced CCRN prep course called Critical Care Academy. It is so thorough and he has broken down everything you need to know into little bite-sized digestible content that he calls micro-learning. Let me tell you, the CCRN is the hardest test I've taken in my entire life. You don't want to go it alone. You want to take this course to ensure that you know your stuff before sitting for the exam. If you'd like to check out his course, you can find it at ccrnacademy.com. And great news, just for being a Rapid Response RN podcast listener, you get 10% off the cost of the course by using the coupon code RAPID10 at checkout. So if you've ever considered getting your CCRN, do it and let Critical Care Academy help make sure that you will pass. I'll put the link and coupon code in the show notes. When you see a narrowed pulse pressure, I want you to think low stroke volume. What are some things that would cause a low stroke volume? Well, we've already talked about hypovolemia, not enough gas in the tank to make a good stroke volume. Also, cardiogenic shock, not enough squeeze to get the blood out effectively. Like each contraction squirts out less blood because the heart's too weak to give a good strong squeeze. Cardiac tamponade, so poor filling. There's just not enough space for the heart to fill because it's being compressed on all sides in its own pericardial sac. Tension pneumothorax, so you have poor venous return to the heart because the lungs are just taking up too much space that the heart needs. A pulmonary embolism, resulting in poor forward flow of blood because of an obstruction in the pulmonary vasculature. Aortic stenosis, like the blood can't get out of the left ventricle because the exit door, the aortic valve, is narrowed. So when you see what looks like a strange blood pressure, like there isn't much of a difference between the systolic and the diastolic, the pulse pressure looks pretty narrow. And you calculate it and realize, yeah, the difference is less than 25% of the systolic. I want you to think low stroke volume. What could cause a low stroke volume? And then once you figure out the cause of low stroke volume, we'll treat that. Don't just blindly treat a blood pressure with fluids or vasopressors, not knowing what the source is. All right, on the flip side, let's say there's a wide pulse pressure. So wide pulse pressure is when the difference between the systolic and the diastolic is huge. Like I said, some people say greater than 100, some people just say greater than normal, which would be greater than 40. All right, so when you see a wide pulse pressure, think vasodilation. So what could cause vasodilation? Neurogenic shock, anaphylactic shock, and of course, septic shock, liver failure, adrenal insufficiency. There's a couple other culprits too for wide pulse pressure, like increasing intracranial pressure, like what you see in Cushing's triad, aortic regurgitation, severe anemia, which causes reduced blood viscosity. That can cause a wide pulse pressure. I could go on and on. This list could go on forever. All right. Something to note for wide pulse pressure is that as we age, our vessels lose elasticity and our blood pressure rises. Like we all know that, right? As you get older, you can get hypertension. Both the systolic and the diastolic blood pressure will rise until about the age of 60. And then our systolic blood pressure keeps rising, but our diastolic actually starts to go down. There is some expected increase in pulse pressure with aging. But in general, when you see a wide pulse pressure, think to yourself, does this person need vasoconstrictors? So let's apply this knowledge about pulse pressure to Mr. S. So Mr. S had a history of heart failure and is on a ton of medications for hypertension, AFib, and a variety of other comorbidities that just kind of go along with heart failure. He comes in the ER for increasing shortness of breath and just looks generally unwell. His heart rate is 78, blood pressure 90 over 30, respiratory rate 26, oxygen saturation 90%, and his temperature's 36 Celsius. The team is thinking he's probably just having a CHF exacerbation and needs some diuretics and maybe some inotropes. But you note the pulse pressure is 60, right? 90 over 30, that's a difference of 60, and that's pretty wide. So wide pulse pressure should make you think about vasodilation. What could cause vasodilation? Well, the most likely culprit is none other than sepsis. But Sarah, wouldn't the patient be febrile if they were septic? Well, no. Not all septic patients present with fever. In fact, septic patients who present hypothermic, like this guy, have a higher mortality. But Sarah, I thought sepsis causes tachycardia. Well, yes, unless the patient has medications on board that keep them from becoming tachycardic. But even without tachycardia,
Patients in septic shock, especially early on, can present with hyperdynamic hearts, meaning the heart is pumping extra hard to increase cardiac output in the face of profound systemic vasodilation, which can further amplify that widened pulse pressure. So we would probably need more diagnostics to confirm my suspicion of sepsis, but with a wide pulse pressure like that, I wouldn't be reaching for diuretics and inotropes just yet. He's probably going to need vasoconstrictors, fluids, and antibiotics. Okay, so let's summarize. Pulse pressure is just another tool. There is no single vital sign or parameter that can tell us how to treat our patient. There are definitely limitations to pulse pressure. Many patients present with mixed shock states, like a patient who is septic and also hypovolemic. Sepsis usually causes a wide pulse pressure from vasodilation, but hypovolemia would cause a narrowed pulse pressure from a low stroke volume. So the pulse pressure would end up being somewhere in the middle, maybe within normal range. But once you treat the volume issue, the vasodilation would become more obvious with a wider pulse pressure. To be honest, pulse pressure is not a very specific tool. I can't use it to point at with diagnostic certainty to any one pathology because there's so many factors that comprise the pulse pressure. But as nurses, we should interpret pulse pressure in the context of other clinical findings and utilize it as a part of a comprehensive assessment rather than relying solely on it for diagnostic purposes. So, next time you see a weird blood pressure, don't just document it and move on. Think about what might be the underlying reason for your patient's narrow or wide pulse pressure. Before you go, I just wanted to let you know that if you like this episode, you would probably like my course too. My 1-hour rapid response and rescue course is an introduction to how I approach emergencies. If you would like to learn to think, assess, and respond quickly when your patient is crashing, then you can check out my website, rapidresponseandrescue.com. And if you message me the word podcast on Instagram, I will send you a coupon code for $10 off the cost of the course. Oh, and did I mention that the course is approved by the AACN and worth one continuing education contact hour? So if you want to level up your emergency response skills and get one CE in the process, then this course is what you want. I put the link in the show notes for you. Well, thanks for listening. I hope you learned something that will save a life. Remember, nursing is a team sport, so trust your intuition and don't give up advocating until you are confident you've done what's right by your patient. The views and opinions expressed on this show are that of Sarah Lorenzini and hers alone. They are not intended as medical advice and should not take the place of your institution's policies or procedures. Evidence-based practice is ever-changing, and your patient care should reflect the current best practice. If you want to get in contact with Sarah, you can find her at rapidresponseandrescue.com or on social media platforms as the Rapid Response RN.